Hi, this is Alejandro Hidalgo, writer and director of the new film, The Exorcism of God, available in select theaters and video on demand everywhere in America. And you are listening to The Graveyard Show.
Welcome to The Graveyard.
Welcome to another edition of the Graveyard Show podcast. I am your caretaker, and the graveyard is open. It's time to say farewell to the winter months, as spring is now here. And I hope it's getting warmer wherever you are, and I hope all of you had a great month of March. I know I certainly did, as I not only uploaded three new podcasts, but a new edition of my video production, Catacombs of Horror. More on that a little later in the podcast, because as you heard at the top of the show, the co-writer and director of the new film, The Exorcism of God, is here, Alejandro Hidalgo, and he will be talking to me in just a moment about his new film, which was released as of March 11th in theaters, on digital, and on demand. Now, of course, I just realized that I forgot to tell Alejandro my trepidation I have when I do any kind of show on exorcism. The very first time I ever did a show on Exorcist was way back when in the day, when I had Brian Amide on the show from Wildclaw Theater, and they were doing a theatrical version of Legion. And that show had some very strange things happen to it, not only there, but when I was doing my raps. You know, I'll have to go back and find which podcast I just revisited that on, and I'll let you know on the other side of this interview. But before I welcome Alejandro to the show, I wanted to revisit the last couple of podcasts. Now, hopefully you had a chance to pre-order the 1980s science fiction documentary In Search of Tomorrow. The deadline was March 27th, but if you missed it, you can still go to the website, which is 80sscifidoc.com. That's 80sscifidoc.com to follow any news regarding the film. Now, if you're not familiar with In Search of Tomorrow, it was done by Creator VC, which is the same team behind the 1980s horror documentaries In Search of Darkness Parts 1 and 2, which are currently streaming on Shudder. And they are planning on doing a Part 3, which should be released by the end of 2022. The writer and director of In Search of Tomorrow, David Weiner, was my guest on the previous two podcasts, so you can check those out if you haven't already to learn more about In Search of Tomorrow. I highly recommend all three of these documentaries. They're fantastic. Now, if you'd like to reach out to me, you have to do it the old-fashioned way. Email. The email address is gyspodcast@gmail.com. That is caretakersawesome@gmail.com. You can send me your thoughts, comments, and if you're part of the horror community and have something to promote, please do not hesitate to reach out as well. But in the meantime, as you hear in the background, a new grave is being added. And when that happens, that means my guest is here, and it's time for me to get to work. Joining me now is Alejandro Hidalgo, the co-writer and director of the new film, The Exorcism of God, which is available in theaters on demand and digital starting March 11th. Alejandro, welcome to the Graveyard Show podcast. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, man. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you for taking the time. So why don't we just start with the most basic question? Why don't you tell everybody what your movie, The Exorcism of God, is about?
The Exorcism of God is the story about a man, a priest called Father Peter Williams. He's a very tormented person that after 18 years, 18 years ago, he was forced to perform an exorcism without any kind of experience. And basically, he was defeated by the devil because the devil played with him psychologically. So he fell in temptation, he was possessed and committed the worst and the most terrible sacrilege. So he has been living all his life with this guilt and this secret by helping people in a very isolated town in Mexico. So the demon has come back to possess a girl called Esperanza. And the only way that Father Peter has to exorcise her is by confessing his sin. But if he confesses his sin, he will be excommunicated. He will lose his home, the place he loves the most. And also he won't be able to save and to help the people he loved. He loves like his children, like he runs an orphanage. So I think this film is like a mixing of an amazing horror movie with great jump scares, with very terrifying imagery, but also a story that explores very intense human dilemmas.
So where did the idea for this story come from?
Well, this idea came basically from my love to the masterpiece of all time for the genre, The Exorcist. I wanted to make a story by playing with the convention and principles of these films and many other exorcism movies. But I wanted to also explore this dilemma because I really love stories when the characters, they have a huge internal conflict. They have to make a final decision. And in this moment, it's very hard to make a decision, you know, because Father Peter, he's helping a group of children who are sick. Basically, apparently they were like hound by the demon and all of them are passing away. But if he confessed the sin, he would be excommunicated, so he won't be able to help them. So what is the right decision? That is tough, you know, like Father Peters will have to decide between his faith for God or his love for his children, you know. So that this, I wanted to explore this very human story, but I also wanted to explore terrifying imagery and playing with the Catholicism principles by also creating very frightening creatures, like two very original and terrifying monsters that we have in the movie that basically are like holy characters that they have been corrupt and transforming in devil creatures.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that came to mind for me was something that I've never seen before in a horror movie, which is a possessed Jesus. I don't think that's ever been done before. So
yeah.
How did that idea come about?
To my mind. Well, this idea came to my mind when I was really young, like when I was a teenager. I remember I watched The Exorcist for the very first time when I was 10 years old and I was alone at home. So this just created huge traumas for me.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to, I wasn't able to sleep alone. I had like a little statue of little baby Jesus in my hand, and I was praying every day because I was raised Catholic. I remember in this movie, like there is one scene when a priest comes into a church and he finds the sculpture of the Virgin, and basically this sculpture was corrupt by men. They put like breasts and penis on her, and he's full of blood. So when I was praying to the Virgin Mary, this image came to my mind, and I felt like terrified and guilty at the same time. So the same happened to me with the Jesus, because basically the Jesus is a character who brought a huge important message of love to humankind. But when you are raised Catholic, you are praying to him, and basically the sculpture you are praying is a man who is crucified, covered in blood and tortured. So I was having some kind of nightmares, imagine like a version of Jesus being possessed or being corrupt or like a diabolical version of him. And I just wanted to share this very dark fear with the horror fans, you know?
Yes, I was raised Catholic as well, so I understand all of that.
Yeah,
there can be some pretty intense, I've sat through some pretty intense church services, so.
Yeah.
And that was back in those days when you would walk into a church and it was the sort of the organ just playing this sort of droning sort of music, and you're just like, did I just walk into a horror movie? Am I supposed to be praying right now?
Yeah.
So I
totally understand.
I hear you, my friend. So you mentioned The Exorcist, and all exorcist themed movies all those roads always seem to lead back to the original, to The Exorcist.
Yeah, so was there? Yes, it is.
So was there a concern on your part that your film would be compared to that film?
I mean, like, I never wanted to compete with that film because basically that is impossible. I just wanted to have fun and to tell a story that is full of amazing horror with original creatures, with by bringing also like a very original twist to the genre, because there is a very powerful spin about the perspective of exorcisms. You know, when we talk about the exorcism of God, we can talk about how can we expel God from our own body by committed sins. So there is a very cool twist. There is also a very cool character development on the story. And I feel like, yeah, the story and the film makes homage to The Exorcist, but it's very original on its own way too. So I wasn't concerned. On the opposite, I was excited to make homage to my favorite horror movie, you know?
Well, I noticed that in one of the early scenes when Father Peter pulls up to the home of the possessed girl, possessed woman, and you see him get out of the car. And to me, that was an homage to the original Exorcist, which I thought was very nice and very cool. You co-wrote the script with Santiago Fernandez Calvete. Talk about the work process between the two of you when you are creating a script. How do you work when writing the script together?
Well, basically, I develop all the idea of the story. I mean, the character progression, the conflict, the antagonist, the evil Jesus. But in that moment, I was working in another project. So basically, I met this very talented writer, and I asked him to develop the first draft. He developed like three. It was very cool. He created the character of Michael. And I really loved everything I read, but then I broke my own vision and my own perspective. So basically, we were like changing the draft and bringing inputs and also discussing every single decision, you know, like, and this was like the way we wrote this script in four hands. Yeah, like it was a very rich creative process, because basically we were making very long phone calls from the distance. Santiago lives in Argentina. I was in Los Angeles. I was in Los Angeles at that time. So it was very fun and very creative and a very rich process.
So how long did it take for the two of you to get the script together to the point where you were ready to go and shoot?
Yeah, it would be difficult to say it, because we stopped the process for years and then we bring it back. So I would say like 2 years, maybe.
Okay.
2 years. We started the process like in 2014, but then we stopped in 2015 and we restarted in 2017. So I would say 2 years if we just bring all the months together.
Gotcha. So the story itself, if you were to take the demon and the devil out of your story, it almost plays like a real world taken from the headlines story, especially when it relates to the church and all the scandals that they have been involved in over these last 20 years that have been, you know, in the public eye.
Yeah.
Was that part of the inspiration for this story when you were putting it together?
Well, this idea came to the end, when basically we developed the ending, and I felt like, okay, it's very difficult to talk about it without spoiling the movie, but basically, yeah, I wanted to use the religion and the horror as a metaphor to talk about the humans, you know, because basically there is a divorce that sometimes exists between spirituality and religion. You know, and basically with this movie, I think we are calling people as individuals to find love where love is. You know, like basically, for example, I just stopped being Catholic when I disagree with an institution that is always has been creating discrimination, for example, against homosexuals.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel God exists. God is a pure energy of love. He's the source of all creation. But basically, the religions are controlled by humans, and humans can get corrupt. You know, we just need to take a look to all of these scandals, and also basically to our own story. We had like an era of humankind story called the Dark Ages. You know, so basically, yeah, we need to be aware where we can find God. And where is basically the religion creating a difference in humans, you know? So I wanted to explore that very important theme in a story that basically shows itself like a horror movie to terrify and just to offer some fun to the audience.
Mm-hmm. Now, you cast Will Bindbrink to play the lead of Father Peter Williams. How did you end up finding him, and talk about what it was like working with him?
Well, I was looking for the right actor for this movie. Our budget was really, really low. We only had like 1.3 million. So at the first moment, we were trying to find very important stars, but it was basically impossible to connect with them. So I spoke with an amazing producer who is called Barbara Musheri. She's the producer of It and It Chapter 2 and The Flash, and she recommended Will as he worked on It Chapter 2. And I saw his work, and basically we talked together and we developed some exercises. He also made an audition for the role, and I found he was perfect because he's a very compromised actor. He was always going deep into the character, developing his like a psychological profile, his background, and when he was on the set, he was really living the suffering and the traumas and the guilt of Father Peter Williams. I mean, like when I was shooting or when we were planning the shooting or working on the set, I was looking at him and he was walking from one side to another one, punching walls, very like full of anger and guilt. So I'm very happy with the final result, because you can see there is honesty in his eyes, you know, and that is the most important thing about an actor. We worked together so hard to find that result that I feel like he deserves to still growing up at the industry.
Yeah, you definitely can see it. And without that, you lose the movie, right? Because that's the heart and the soul of the film is him and the guilt and the and his attempts at redemption that keep getting shunned, or he delays it himself for whatever reason, you know, goes on in the film, which I don't want to give away. Yeah. And it's amazing how much different he looks from the opening sequence in the film. And then you do the flash forward 18 years. It takes a second to realize that it's the same actor and the same character, because he has the beard and he looks different and he's aged slightly, and it looks very, very different. So a job well done with everyone who put that together. It looked really great. Speaking of
basically that scene, like the first scene in the movie, was the last one we shot because we needed to remove his beard. So
he grew that then. So that was all him. That wasn't makeup. Yeah. Oh wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's one of those when you make, that's a commitment you can't turn back on.
Yeah.
Shave the beard. Exactly. Are we have everything? Are we good? No reshoots?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. We are ready.
Yeah. You don't want to go back and go, well, remember that beard you grew? That would be a bad day.
Exactly.
Speaking of the opening scene, that opening scene is quite involved. And I was wondering how much of that sequence was actual real practical effects and how much of it was CG and done in post.
We mix both, you know, like we have the bed jumping, and we have some like when the demons, when Balban screams, there is like a wave of objects flying on the air and hitting the walls. Basically, for that scene, we had like catapults, you know. But when we used them, it didn't work because all the objects were falling on the same spot, on the same place. So I said, okay, let's remove the bed, and I need every person on the crew takes an object and we throw it. So we were like 25 guys. Okay, action, and we throw all the objects, you know. So it was very, very fun. And also for the bed, we had like 20 people grabbing a rope to let the bed to fall, and that was very yeah.
Wow.
And but then we miss it, you know, like we have the, of course, a practical effects makeup, and we also have like his Balban's eyes. Sometimes they are CGI, mm-hmm. and sometimes you see like faces screaming on the walls, or even some objects flying. So we basically mix as much practical effects as we can with some CGI to complement them and to make it more real and more terrifying. Because to be honest, the budget was very limited, so we had to be very creative.
Sure. How many days did you shoot the film?
7 weeks, like 42 days.
Okay. And you have quite a bit of involved possession scenes in this film, so certainly nothing easy.
No.
Did you allot more time for those scenes because those are the big action sequences and the frightening moments of the film? Or was it one of those things where you kind of just had to break it down and just, you know?
Yeah. Well, basically, I tried to put as much days as possible for every single possession or exorcism scene. The time was always fighting against us, you know, because as I said, the budget was very limited, and I was really exhausted because basically the first 2 weeks we were shooting during all night, and basically your body is exhausted, that you don't have any energy to still moving forward. I had troubles with my assistant directors. I lost two of them. And basically, the third one, he was sick during the final week, and I had to direct the movie and to become my own assistant director as well. So basically, I was praying to have one very simple scene of two characters just having a conversation. Yeah. but that never was happening. You know, like, okay, which scene you have tomorrow? Okay, we have the exorcism of God, or we have the possessed Jesus, or we have the possessed virgin. And I was like really tired. I was so exhausted that basically 2 days before finishing the shooting, I almost faint. I almost fall unconscious on the floor just because of the stress and because I was exhausted, you know?
Of course. I mean, night shoots suck.
Yeah.
They're the worst. I've unfortunately lived through several in my lifetime, and it's hard to turn your body around.
Yeah.
You really understand why we are awake during the day and we sleep at night. Just you can't do it. It's hard, and to do it over several weeks, and then the turnaround on the weekends on your day, it's not fun. I don't miss any of that.
No. Yeah, going to bed at 5 or 6 a.m. to then wake up at 1 p.m. or 2 is like, okay, I felt like I didn't sleep anything.
Yeah, oh, it's brutal. And then on top of that, to lose your assistant directors. I don't think people, you know, the average person out there doesn't understand, I think, what assistant directors do on the set. But I mean, it's a very important job, and to lose them,
he basically is coordinate everything. So now you understand it.
Yeah, it's your right hand. It's your right hand, you know, teammate. It's the person that you're telling, hey, this is what we're going to be doing next, or they're telling you, hey, we have to move on because, you know, the next scene, you know, or we're chasing the light, or they're the ones that are keeping the set rolling while you're. You know, planning your film. Now, this is your second horror film. I'm going to get into your first one because it's a very monumental film in just a moment.
Thank you.
What did you learn from your first horror film that you brought to this movie?
Well, I wanted to improve my skills as a director by getting into more complicated stagings and very difficult action scenes. I also wanted to go and move forward to create like a bigger universe with a bigger production value, more visual and special effects. So I wanted to explore the English language to be able to put the movie as wide as possible. You know, I wanted this movie to be watched in any place on earth, And basically, I am very, very happy with the result. You know, they are very different kind of stories. And if I'm honest to you, I even love a little bit more my first horror movie, because I feel it's more like emotional and maybe more psychological. Mm-hmm. So if you ask me what is my next project, I'm going to remake The House at the End of Time in English.
Okay.
We were planning. Yeah, I was working with New Line Cinemas, and New Line Cinema was developing the remake, but unfortunately we fall into the development hell. So now the project came back to me, and I'm developing by myself. So I'm very excited to make that story with all the skills I learned from The Exorcism of God, and by elevating the production value and making a very emotional but terrifying movie.
I'm just going to throw this out there. Is there a difference between making a film in Spanish versus making a film in English?
Not really, you know, like basically in this movie, The Exorcism of God was shot in Mexico, and basically the 80% of the crew were Latino, mm-hmm. but my actors were speaking English. So basically my brain was split in two. Like I was talking to the actor like in English, and then I turned to one side to talk to my DP in Spanish. So mm-hmm. I was like, my mind was so confused.
Sure.
But I don't think there is like a bigger difference
sure.
more than that.
Okay. When you write the script, did you write it in English at all or no? Because I'm curious about the translation, because I know sometimes you have the loss in translation when you jump between different languages. And I'm just curious whether or not, you know, there was some moments where you were kind of like, you know, if there were like challenges.
Yeah. Well, the first drafts, they were written in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Then the last ones, I developed them in English, but I also took them and shared them with a very talented writer translator. You know, like mm-hmm. if you share your script just with a translator, you will fail. You know, but you need that translator also to be a writer. So you need to discuss every single line and every single dialogue to be able not just to translate, but also to adapt the dialogues, you know? So
sure.
That's the way I feel we found a very good result.
Well, I'm always impressed with anybody who's bilingual or trilingual, because I can barely speak English. So, you know, I wish I were bilingual. I try.
You
and
do
I
it
just,
better.
You know.
You do it better than me.
Speaking of, you'd mentioned The House at the End of Time. So that was your first horror film, and it was the first Venezuelan horror film, which to me is shocking. So, so how was it that your film was the first a Venezuelan horror film?
Well, and nobody believed in the project, you know, like in Venezuela, the most of the filmmakers, they love to make like artistic author movies, mm-hmm. films, and basically nobody explored the genre. So when I was doing it, this was also my first feature film. So and nobody had good expectations. Everyone was like, oh, this film is going to be shit. And then when they watched the final result and the response of the audience, that, you know, like we released this film in just 25 theaters in Venezuela, and the attendance was so massive that basically the film stayed in movie theaters for 9 months.
Wow.
And the movie became the highest grossing horror film ever released in Venezuela, even against any Hollywood horror title, you know, like The Conjuring or The Ring or even The Exorcist or The Sixth Sense. So yeah, after that we had like the international distribution. We got several fantastic international awards, and until we got the opportunity to remake the film with New Line Cinema.
Well, you must have been very proud to have that accomplishment.
Yeah. I'm very, very proud and excited to also be growing up with every single movie. And yeah, like I think that the best school you have is your own movies to become better and better every day and to connect with your audiences.
Well, congratulations on that. That's really awesome. And so The Exorcism of God, if anybody wants to find it online or social media, or if they want to follow you on social media, where can they go?
Yeah. Okay, for the movie, the film is on Instagram with only the title, The Exorcism of God. And if you want to find me, you just look for Ale Hidalgo Films.
Awesome. Alejandro Hidalgo, thank you so much, sir, for joining me here on the Graveyard Show podcast. It was great having you here, and much success and congratulations on the new film.
Thank you so much. So excited to be with you, and so excited the American audience to enjoy our film in select theaters or video on demand.
And as I put this interview to rest, I want to again thank Alejandro for joining me on the program. His movie, The Exorcism of God, is available in theaters on digital and on demand as of March 11th. So you should be able to find it, no problem. I found it on my satellite provider the other day, so it is definitely out there. You should check it out when you get time. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, whenever I talk about exorcists or exorcism on this program, I get a little leery about approaching the topic. This happened to me, actually, from the original version of the Graveyard Show podcast from 2009 and 10. I think this actually happened around 10. I had Brian Amide on the program. He was head of the Wildclaw Theater in Chicago, I think. Yeah, it's in Chicago. They were doing a theatrical version of Legion, which is the sequel to The Exorcist. At least the book was, which of course later became Exorcist 3, or a version of it became Exorcist 3. So Brian came on to talk about the play, and when I uploaded it back then, there was something I noticed that was weird that happened. There was all kinds of weird digital glitches on his portion of the podcast. He was a second guest on that show, and all the problems were on his side of the podcast. And then when I was recording my raps, something weird was going on here in the graveyard that you can kind of hear in the background. And it's not something that I did. It wasn't something I was trying to do for promotion or anything. It just happened. So I found where you can listen to it again. It was actually when I started doing interviews again. So go back to Tombstone 17. I had Jay Cheel on the program. He, of course, is the director of the series Cursed Films. See, tied it in. And I had mentioned to him that I had a Cursed Films moment on my podcast. And later on in the podcast, around the 49-minute mark, I talk about what happened. And then right after that, I played back some edited portions of that moment. So if you're interested, go back to Tombstone 17 around the 49-minute mark, and you can hear what I'm referencing. So, yeah. But ever since then, everything's been okay, because I had Damien Levesque on the program about a year ago to talk about his film, The Cleansing Hour, and now Alejandro's film as well. So I think things are settling here in the graveyard. I don't want to have any more weird things go on here. There's enough weirdness here just with me. I don't need some additional craziness going on here inside the graveyard. All right. I wanted to invite you to join me on my latest production, Catacombs of Horror. It can be found on the Graveyard Show Podcast YouTube channel. It's a video production that I produce exclusively just for online. It takes a while to put these things together, and I'm really proud of the three that I've uploaded. The first one I did was with David Weiner and I talking about what we thought best represented 1980s horror in four different categories. The second one was my favorite scenes from Count Yorga, a Vampire, which you guys are going crazy over that one, which I'm really pleased about. And the latest edition of Catacombs of Horror are my favorite scenes from the movie Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. I also talk about a missed opportunity that the Halloween series could have taken, and why I think that Halloween 4 is the most important movie in the series outside the original. So again, that's Catacombs of Horror. You can find it on the Graveyard Show Podcast YouTube channel in the playlist Catacombs of Horror. And I'm trying to get the Catacombs of Horror YouTube channel up and running as well. I just have a lot going on, and I haven't had time. I think I have one video up right now. It's the Count Yorga one. It's an edited version. It's the same video. It's just presented a little differently. And I'll get into that another time. In the meantime, if you know anyone who's a fan of horror, please invite them to enter the graveyard. New listeners and friends are always welcome. That's going to do it for me, my friends. I will see you again very, very soon. And in the meantime, as you exit the graveyard, I would like to remind you to please lock the gate behind you. We wouldn't want anyone to get out. Until next time.